Welcome to Ghostly.
Is the Castle of Good Hope in South Africa haunted?
Ghostly is a podcast that comes out every other week. In each episode, we take a ghost story or paranormal event and look into its complete history. Rebecca then gives us evidence proving that the story is real, and my job is to debate those pieces of evidence and get you, the listener, prepared to vote on if it's real or not. If you haven't yet, please hit that subscribe button. And as always, we're your host. I'm Pat.
And I'm Rebecca.
So we have an episode today. I don't think we've ever gone to the continent of Africa in any of our episodes.
I don't think so.
There might have been one in like northern, like maybe not Ethiopia, but someplace like that. I don't remember though.
Yeah. So I'm excited to get there.
I mean, seriously, there's like a whole continent we have not done episodes on.
Yes.
And this one is very interesting. South Africa is very interesting. You know, it's majority of indigenous people, but the small minority, like I'm talking less than 20%, controlled the country for so long.
Yeah.
Ridiculously long time, like hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm. Well, apartheid. I mean, that's.
And that's why, like, when we talked about Mandela and stuff in the Mandela effect.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's where this came up.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess that, you know, that's like it, that reinforces why that was so important for, you know, him to be in power then,
mm-hmm,
because
absolutely,
it was finally giving power back to these indigenous people, mm-hmm, you know. Anyways,
I mean, we could obviously, I mean, the history of South Africa.
Yeah, exactly.
That
exactly.
Would be quite a series that we are not going to tackle.
Yeah, but this is in Cape Town, which is a very popular spot in Africa, South Africa.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting to explore the history, and this particular place we're going, I think, does a good job of kind of encapsulating a lot of the history.
Absolutely. I think it does, too.
Yeah.
So this is the part where we would usually do a shout-out on Ghostly. There's two ways to get a shout-out on Ghostly. The first way is to give us a review on Apple Podcast. We always prefer those 5-star reviews, but, you know, as we've proven in the past, we will read any and all reviews that we receive. The second way is to become a member on Patreon. Just go to ghostlypodcast.com and click on Patreon in the menu bar. And we have a lot of different tiers to choose from. Some give you access to, you know, going to a Ghostly X recording live each month.
Mm-hmm. And some are ad-free episodes.
Yep.
We actually just released, or I'm sorry, I should say, well, maybe it'll be out by the time this comes out, but we'll be releasing soon an episode we just recorded for Ghostly X where we did our stories that we did live at C2E2.
Yeah, so this is being recorded on Sunday, mm-hmm, on the 28th, and we just did C2E2 yesterday.
Absolutely. So if you weren't able to come to that live show, yeah, you can at least hear the stories that we shared. God.
One of them is really, it's something. It's
maybe
something.
Not before lunch.
I don't know. It's cringeworthy. It's cringeworthy.
Definitely. And we told a little bit of extended versions of, yes, the stories last week for Ghostly X. So
yeah.
So you definitely go check it out. See if, yeah, you like it.
Unfortunately, there are no shout outs to give on this particular episode.
Yes. All right. So I've got some listener mail.
Okay.
So this is from Brenda.
Brenda. Okay. Thank you, Brenda.
Hello, Pat and Rebecca. I grew up on the east side of Joliet, Illinois.
Oh, okay.
There we go. Years ago, around 92 or 93, I went on a Chicago ghost tour. This wasn't the Ursula Bilski tour, but I did go to that one years later.
Oh, cool.
The Ursula Bilski tour is in a school bus painted black, or it was. I mean, I don't know if she's still doing that
she
one.
She does not currently do it, yeah. I don't think.
Now, okay, so the first tour was in a huge charter bus. It had a bathroom in the bus and snacks were provided to us in the middle of the tour. Oh. Sounds very nice. Now, okay, she says, if I'm remembering correctly, it may have been an Aleister Crowley ghost tour. I don't think the timing works. I wonder if maybe that'd be Richard Crowe.
Could be Richard Crowe. And I don't know what Aleister Crowley would have to do with Chicago tours.
Right. So like I said, I think Crowe and Crowley, like, yeah, in my brain.
Maybe, I don't know.
We don't know, but just my guess.
Yeah.
Okay, back to the letter. We went to all the usual haunted places in Chicago. We got out of the bus to look into the windows of the Hull House.
Mm.
Been there, done that.
Yep.
Super, super spooky. We heard all of the scary stories. It was a creepy, wonderful experience. There was one thing that happened to me that no one else in the whole bus saw. I was looking out the bus window, and standing there on the side of the road was a little boy in tan-colored knickers with a matching tan hat.
Knickers, wow.
Yeah. He was wearing a white shirt. He reminded me of a young boy who would sell newspapers years ago.
Oh, yeah, I can picture that. Yeah.
He was standing there all alone in the middle of the night, looking right up at me. No one else was around him. I remember him like it was yesterday. I turned around super fast and asked my friends who were in the seats beside me and across from me, the seats were facing each other, if they had seen him. I practically screamed, "Did you see that boy? He was just standing there all alone." No one else said they saw him. I kept swearing up and down to them that there was a boy there. He definitely looked out of place. I just don't understand why I would be the only one to see him. I've never forgotten him. I know he was there looking right at me. I know Pat probably doesn't believe me, but it really happened. I only wish it would have been in the days of cell phones. I love your podcast. I love hearing all the stories from the area I grew up in. I have more stories. I'll send them to you at a later time. Thank you for all that you do. Love, Brenda.
All right. So just for the record, I when I'm not on Ghostly's dime, I don't need to decide if I believe something or not. So
you can just listen and
I can just listen and enjoy the story. And that's what I do during listener mail, unless I'm told to debate it or something, which I don't like to do because I don't want to debate these things that you guys believe firmly. It's crazy. But yeah, like I don't typically, when I hear a ghost story, I'm not like, nope, don't believe that. I just.
Well, you do, but it's in your head.
Yeah, well, I mean, if I had to sit down and think about it and be like, okay, is this real? Then I'd be like, probably not. I don't know. But anyways, if you want to have your story read like Brenda's, thank you so much, Brenda. Mm-hmm. You could email us at info@ghostlypodcast.com. Or a lot of people like to just use that contact us form on the website, ghostlypodcast.com. Click on contact us and it'll walk you through what you can say in there. And then one of our favorite ways, though, to get a ghost story is through the actual mail. You can send things to P.O. Box number 264, Geneva, Illinois, 60134. And we check our mailbox sporadically. So if you sent something to us, you might want to nudge us with an email, too, or something to go check.
We'll make it down there.
Yeah.
We do check.
And you're not going to remember any of that information, but it is in the footer of ghostlypodcast.com if you need it.
Just go right there. All right. Want to hear those polls from our last episode?
I never want to hear the polls.
Well,
it always is like the big downer of the episode for me. I'm all happy and then,
hey, you have won your fair share.
Maybe.
What I think is appropriate for your fair share.
Oh, then one?
In our last episode, we talked about the Driscoll Hotel.
We did. I remember
Austin,
that.
In Austin, Texas. And actually, for this one, yes was 40% and no was 60%.
Wow. Okay, that's
so
interesting.
So you won, so no complaining today.
Well, I mean, I can always complain still. The overall rating was 3.2 out of like 1 through 10.
So pretty low.
I'm pretty low, I would say. You know, I mean, you have to remember there is skeptics that are voting as well.
Yes.
So most of them will always vote one. So it will always bring the rating down. But it's fair if we do it over a course of time and over a course of episodes.
There you go. Well, yeah, this episode, sorry, I noticed when we were setting it up. I mean, there's some bonus episodes in there and things like that, but we're on 140 episodes.
140, yep.
We're really getting up there. We've got a lot of data.
we do definitely.
All right, you ready for a ghost story?
I am always ready for a ghost story.
Okay.
It's time for a spooky tale from our bed.
They say becoming a guard at the Castle of Good Hope on the overnight shift is not for the faint of heart. I was warned that I would see and experience things that would turn my blood to ice. I took those warnings as just some sort of hazing. No part of me believed it. It's nighttime, people. Just get worked up, I told myself. The first 6 months, nothing happened. I mean, some of the other guards told me stories and a few played some jokes on me to try to scare me, but none of it was anything. But the last few nights have been, well, I don't really know what to think. 2 nights ago, I was on duty and I heard the bell going off in the guard room. No one was supposed to be there, but it just kept going off. So I decided I'd better go and check it. When I got there and opened the door, no one was there. Then later, I heard another bell. But this one was not the little electronic bell that we use. This was a real bell, and it was coming from the old bell tower, the bricked up bell tower. I asked the other guard when I saw him later if he'd heard it too. He laughed and said, "Yep, now you know." But while those were a little odd and a little unnerving, what happened last night was even crazier. I was just doing my regular walk when I heard distinct voices, a man and a woman arguing. All of a sudden, the woman was screaming and the man was yelling even more. I ran to investigate. I heard the voices all the way up until I got to the dungeon. When I turned the corner, no one was there and all the voices stopped. But I felt an icy chill come over my body and all the hair on my arms stood on end. I don't know for sure what's going on, but I think the spirits of this place have decided to welcome me.
All right, so this is completely fabricated then, right?
This is based on some reports that guards have made.
Oh, but you embellished it in story form, though.
I mean, I made it into a story, but these are claims.
Okay, all right. We're going to take a short break, and then when we return, we're going to talk about the history and the pathbacks. You ready for the Pat Facts?
Pat Facts!
So, the Castle of Good Hope is not exactly a castle at all.
Oh.
It is more like a fortress built in South Africa in Cape Town. Mm-hmm. Between 1666, 666, you know, and 1679, the Dutch East India Company built the Castle of Good Hope.
Okay.
Now, there was previously a fort on the grounds of the castle called the Fort de Godet that was constructed from clay and timber.
Yeah, by the way, there's a lot of Dutch names.
There's a lot of weirdness in this.
Trying our best.
Yeah. The area the castle was built in is called the Cape of Good Hope. So why it got its name, you know, which a lot of people mistakenly say it's the southernmost tip of Africa. Is not, actually.
Okay.
It's Cape Agulhas.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The purpose of the Dutch settlement in the Cape was to act as a replacement station for the ships passing the treacherous coast around the Cape on long voyages between the Netherlands and the Dutch East India, which is now Indonesia.
Okay.
Jan van Riebeeck. Jan van Riebeeck was instructed by Commissioner Isbrand Gozeko to build a pentagonal fortress out of stone.
When you look at the pictures, it looks to me, it reminds me of the Pentagon.
Yeah, it does.
Because
it does.
It's pentagonal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So picture that five-star thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I didn't even think about that until you brought it up.
But I didn't either until I heard you use the word here. Yeah. And then I was like, that's what it looks like in the pictures. Yeah.
The first stone was laid on January 2nd, 1666. The fortress was partially built by slave labor.
Yep.
And in fact, they didn't want to use people from the area, so they brought in slaves from all over the place. So that's why you get such a mix of people there, too, because not only was it Dutch, there was English, there was the indigenous people, and then there was slaves from all over the place.
Yeah.
Why did it take 13 years to build the castle? Well, because the Dutch East India Company was reluctant to spend any money on it. You know, you need money to do these things. Mm-hmm. In 1682, the gated entry replaced the old entrance, which had faced the sea. A bell tower situated over the main entrance, this is the one you were talking about in your story, was built in 1684. The original bell, the oldest in South Africa, was cast in Amsterdam in 1697, and it was used to announce the time, as well as warning citizens in case of danger, since it can be heard almost 7 miles away.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was also rung to summon residents and soldiers when important announcements needed to be made.
Interesting.
The fortress housed a church, a bakery, various workshops, living quarters, shops, and cells, among other facilities.
So prison slash town.
Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about the prisons in a little bit. The yellow paint on the walls was originally chosen because it lessened the effect of heat in the sun.
Oh, smart.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Yeah,
I feel like we're starting to try to do that today a little bit more.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
There was a wall built to protect citizens in case of attack. It divides the inner courtyard, which also houses the Decat balcony, which was designed by Louis Michel Thibault, with reliefs and sculptures by Anton Anareth. They used this balcony to make announcements. So that's where they would make the announcements. They'd ring the bell, then make the announcements there.
This reminds me of, oh my gosh, in the summer, you go to the Ren Faire.
Oh, yeah.
They're on
it
the
is kind of like the Ren Faire.
Making announcements.
Yeah, with the slaves and stuff like that, it reminds me more of something from Game of Thrones.
Oh,
with
well,
Daenerys yeah, talking true. To them and stuff, yeah. Okay, so part of the castle was used as a prison during the Second Boyer War, which was 1899 to 1902. The cells still remain intact today. Mm. In 1936, the castle was declared a historical monument, and it was the first site in South Africa to be declared a historical monument. Extensive restorations were completed during the 1980s, making the castle the best-preserved example of a Dutch East India Company fort. I think there was some Dutch East India stuff in America as well.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I mean, obviously, we just even more hear about the British East
exactly.
India Company. Yep. That's like in America, a bigger thing we talk about.
Sure.
But so it's interesting to hear about the East.
About the Dutch. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they were in competition.
They were. And yeah, that's a lot of the reason why they did this is because they so the United Kingdom had one of the best navies.
Oh, true.
And so to combat that, they needed different ports that they could station their ships at.
Okay.
So this is one of them that most of the time, like the United Kingdom ships would go north over stuff, but they would go south and go all the way around Africa to get to where they needed to go.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Anyways, to get to like India and stuff like that. Yeah. So the castle acted as local headquarters for the South African Army in the Western Cape, and today houses the Castle Military Museum and ceremonial facilities for the traditional Cape Regiment. The castle is also the home of the Cape Town Highlanders Regiment, a mechanized infantry unit.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so that's about all that I have found that, I mean, there's a lot more
obviously.
With a bunch of names of people and stuff like that, but none of these people ring a bell, so I didn't think it was gonna, you know.
It's good just to get an overview and
absolutely,
an understanding.
Absolutely.
And the one thing I just wanted to add is I found this interesting article. It was titled Ghosts, so of course that's why I read it, but they meant more like ghosts as in the bad history.
Oh, okay,
ghosts.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Gotcha.
But it was on Matimedia, M-A-T-I-E, media.org. And it was from 2020. And it was talking about the newest CEO of the Castle Control Board, Calvin Gifelin, who looks like he's African, who looks like he's indigenous.
Okay.
But he's been working to basically remake the castle to incorporate indigenous history from, and this makes sense now from what you were saying, they brought in slaves from other areas, Namibia and parts of Botswana and South Africa, and combine that with the Dutch history to show like a more balanced approach.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting.
And they have these four statues that are amazing and beautiful of the four different African leaders, like from the Zulus and
probably different tribes
that rebelled and tried to overcome the Dutch.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
Yeah. It just, it's, and I don't know if he's still in charge, but again, that was as of 2020.
Yeah. I mean, I like when they, you know, try to get us to see a more complete picture of things.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, here, especially in the States, you know, we grow up learning like the white people history. That's right. All that we learn, you know, and it's there's a whole nother part of history that we're lacking in. And, you know, I really believe that if you don't know your history, you're bound to repeat it. So, I mean, I think we make these mistakes that we might be able to avoid if we knew more of the history.
Absolutely.
Yeah, history is a big deal to me. I mean, not just because of Pat Facts, but because I've always enjoyed, you know, studying history.
I think that's one of the reasons that as part of this podcast, you wanted to do Pat Facts.
Yeah, yeah.
So that you get the opportunity to talk about the history.
Absolutely. Like, where do you hear about the history in a lot of these ghost stories? Mm-hmm. You don't.
Yep. You only hear the history as it relates to the ghost story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I want to talk about the history around the ghost story as well. All right, so we're going to take a short break again, and when we return, I guess Rebecca's going to debate some stuff.
Let's do some ghost stories.
It's time for the debate, right?
Yes.
All right. So you have some evidence for me.
I do have some evidence for you. I mean, I can have as much evidence as you want. No, we're gonna hit the highlights. We're gonna hit the main, most popular stories that you hear. So
wait, you found a lot of stuff.
I found a lot of stuff. Is what I'm saying. Yes. But I think there's a few stories that are, again, the most common. That are talked about.
So Coffee talked about.
So this first one's a little bit like longer, just because there's a little bit of a story in there than sometimes we're able to have.
Okay.
So this is the apparition on the wall. So this is something that's been seen since it was first reported in 1915. But then there was a story from 1947 that we're going to talk about. So basically, I wanted to start just by saying soldiers who guard the castle would often rather walk all the way around the outside of the building where we're going to be talking about rather than go through the haunted archways in the wee of the morning. Like, they'd rather not go inside these buildings than just be outside. So the first reported paranormal occurrence with this man was this tall gentleman that was seen in 1915 on one of the castle's ramparts. And then he wasn't seen again until 1947, where he was seen on a regular basis over a 2-week period. He would be seen jumping off the side of one of the castle walls and
parkour.
He was doing parkour and walking between the bastions, Leerdam and Oren. Hey,
okay.
Okay. Over the course of three nights at 3-day intervals, so every third day, right, in July of 1947, there were sightings of an 8-foot semi-transparent apparition. And I've also seen 6.5-foot, so I don't really know. I don't know.
Okay.
But
I mean, how are they measuring this guy?
I don't know. I think that's kind of interesting. It was first spotted on the ramparts, where after being approached by the guards on duty in a pincer movement, no less, they're trying to because they think it's a guy, right? It just jumped off the battlements and disappeared into thin air, like above an old moat. Like, can you imagine if you're like, okay, guys, there's a guy here that shouldn't be here. We're trying to get him, and he just jumps off and then disappears. 3 nights later, it was seen again. Before reporting the incident to the commander, though, the resourceful Corporal Bunzer decided to first eliminate the possibility of the ghost being a soldier playing a practical joke. So to do this, he recruited the help of Private Snagens. Private Snagens was ordered to, quote, haunt the battlements while covered in a sheet.
This is Scooby-Doo.
This is them trying to prove that it's Scooby-Doo, mm-hmm. right?
Okay.
So not the sort of thing that you that inspired people to join the army, mm-hmm. but...
Join the army, you could put a white sheet on yourself.
Pretend to be a ghost.
Pretend to be a ghost, yeah.
Unsurprisingly, the soldiers who had gathered to the haunted area were not convinced, and with much laughter, dispelled the idea of a Joker in a sheet being the culprit. In other mm-hmm. words, they're like, this is not what we saw. The last night the ghost appeared, he not only hovered, but also rang the bells in the guardroom. The troops were now no longer laughing. They were in a cold sweat of fear. Corporal Bonzer was ready to present his report to the commander of the castle. And although the commander asked the military police to keep an eye open for practical jokers, and they're like... Didn't he read that he tried to figure that out? but finding no instructions in the military code how to deal with ghosts, went on with his work.
Okay.
So it didn't really go
They actually
there.
Looked up ghost in their book.
And they're like,
there's got to be a protocol for this. You know, let's look it up.
All right. What do you think?
I'm going to say this is probably just a shadow that it's playing like a trick on them. They're, you know, like if you move a certain way, your shadow moves a certain way and it might look like you're jumping off into something. So that's what I'm going to say. And also the 8-foot man, your shadow can look a lot bigger than you can, you know, if it's in the right kind of, if the right light hits it and stuff. So I'm going to say it's just a shadow because this seems weird. And I'm thinking the bells ringing is just some guard playing tricks. I think that especially because they knew people were getting scared of this shadow thing, that they were like, okay, let's do this to make it even creepier. So I'm going to give this one a 0. I think that could explain everything right there.
Okay. For me, I think this one is an 8.
An 8?
Yeah. Wow. To have so many people see this this apparition. And
it only takes one goofball to do it, though.
But
and just because they weren't wearing a sheet doesn't mean anything, you know?
I don't know, but I mean, if it's a bunch of people and they think like, okay, this is like a thing, and then, yeah, anyways. So to me, it's okay. Convincing because it's more than one person that All right. saw it, and they saw it several times. Okay, so for this one, we don't have a lady in white.
Oh, good. Oh, we don't have a lady in white in this one? How
no.
is this even a ghost story then?
Well, we have... The Gray Lady.
The Gray Lady.
Which, it's funny, someone did point this out in an article. Mm-hmm. That's like the ghost from Harry Potter.
Oh,
the Ravenclaw
yeah,
ghost
yeah,
is the Gray Lady. But I think this is where she got her inspiration for it.
Okay,
I don't know.
Maybe.
So the Lady in Gray is seen holding her hands and crying hysterically as she runs through the castle. I grabbed this because I thought this was an interesting one. Famous sighting of this ghost occurred in 1947 during a royal family tour. They meaning the British royal family. Mm-hmm. They were in Cape Town celebrating Princess Elizabeth's 21st birthday.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Several members of the party, including Princess Margaret, saw this ghost.
Princess Margaret used to drink a lot.
Well, she wasn't the only one.
Okay.
Several people saw her. Now, this is an interesting little like end to this is they were doing excavations because they've done that there. And there was a female skeleton that was unearthed at the old Sally Gates. And they are believed to be her remains because she has not been seen since that they found them.
Okay. Well, okay. I'm going to say with the royal family seeing it is this was a celebration. During celebrations, there's lots of drinking going on and stuff like that. They were under the influence.
I can't imagine the royals.
Oh,
party!
Princess Margaret was one of the biggest partiers out there. rest in peace. But anyways, I'm going to just say that this was all just because of some drunken nights that they seen this.
Okay. So what are you giving it?
I'm going to give this one a 0.
Okay. I'm going to give this one a 6.
Okay.
Because this is one instance of somebody seeing her. I suppose there's been others, but I couldn't find any other specific ones. So, I think there probably was something going on, but it is interesting that once this skeleton was found, people stopped reporting.
Okay.
The sites.
Yeah.
All right. There's another lady that haunts the castle, and this is Lady Anne Bernard.
Okay.
Didn't
we talk about her during the Tower of London?
We probably did. Okay. It's not what's his name's wife.
Oh, okay.
And Berlin.
Oh,
sorry.
Anne Berlin. Yeah,
yeah. Sorry. Yeah. Anne Bernard. But 17. Bernard. Yeah, this is Anne Bernard. But like, they're all very similar. Like, to be honest, I did a lot of research from this time period once for a class.
Not all women are the same.
No,
Rebecca.
They're not. But I feel like looking at her picture, she looks like so many of the women that I did research on. So I don't know. But so British lady, May 1797.
Okay.
She was the wife. Well, I heard two different reports. Mm-hmm. She was either the wife of the British colonial secretary or another thing I read said that his wife didn't actually want to move there. And so she was just there to like act as the first lady.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyways, so she, but I guess, so let's just, she was there with her husband though, and she acted as the first lady. We'll just go with that as a, for sure. She lived in the governor's residence, because he, you know, it was too large, I guess, for just like being him. Like he wanted other people there.
Oh, okay.
She made an everlasting impression on the social life at the Cape. So she documented, and this is all like, forget the ghost stuff. Like this is really true. She drew a lot of sketches and she documented everything that she did while she was there and left it behind. And so when they've been doing all of this restoration, a lot of what they've restored is from her sketches what she wrote.
Okay.
So she really did live there and she really did love the place and she did a lot of work to document it. The dolphin pool where she would bathe has been reconstructed from the drawings that she made of it. She was also known to not be wearing clothes.
Well, when I take a shower,
when she was bathing there, I mean,
you don't want to get the clothes wet.
I guess. I mean, it seems like it was like outside, so I don't know. But but her ghost has supposedly been seen in this area. Au naturel. But the other
in her birthday suit.
But the other thing that where she's seen though, I think this is the more often one. That she was there to help entertain guests. Like that's what the first lady does, right? She throws the parties.
By bathing naked?
No. Just throwing the parties.
Okay.
Basically. And basically that is where her ghost is often seen is when there are parties. So she's curly haired and she is known to appear at the parties dressed in a gown from the late 1700s.
I mean, like who sees these people? Like who sees her? I mean, I don't, there's a lot to this story I don't understand. Like who sees her? How does she look when they see her? Did they mistake her from someone that's at the party? Did they like?
I didn't find any like firsthand accounts from her.
Okay.
About her stories, her sightings.
All right. Well, then I'm going to have to probably go zero on this one just because there's like a lot of things that just aren't answered in this particular thing. In order to make it like a real ghost story, we need to know how she was seen. Like, was she seen like an apparition or something like that? Or was she seen like a normal person? But... Or was she seemed like, you know, like there's just a lot to that. Who saw her? I need to know that. You know, I need to know the circumstances. Just, it was at a party. So obviously these people party pretty good. I'm thinking, so I'm going to go zero on this one again.
Okay. I'm going to give this one another six.
Okay.
Cause I, you know, again, she seems like she left a pretty good imprint here, but she also didn't die here. So again, people just say she just really loved this place and that's why they think she comes back.
All right.
All right. Now, this next one is not necessarily, I mean, there's a little bit of ghosty at the end, but it's also about a curse.
Ooh, curse. Okay.
Okay. So this is the curse of Pieter Jasbert van Noot.
Okay. Van Noot.
That's my best. I'm so sorry. I have a friend who married Gersberg a Dutchman. Van Noot. And I should have asked more questions, but I try my best. So in April, he was not a good man, just as a heads up. He was pretty horrible. In April of 1729, Captain Rudolf Allman gave a firsthand account of Van Noot's death. So this is coming from someone that was there on site at the time.
Okay.
So basically, Van Noot ordered... seven soldiers to be condemned to death for betrayal. Basically, like everyone says that they didn't really do what they what they were condemned for, okay, basically. And the council had given them a more lenient sentence, but Van Noot was like, nope, death. Mm. One of the soldiers among them was a theological candidate. So maybe like, I guess, wanted to be some sort of
a priest
or something, who stood for divine justice on the gallows. So the very same day he called for divine justice, on the gallows right before they were all killed. He basically said, like, Van Noot, you are the one, I curse you, right? Supposedly on the very same day, Van Noot was found to be dead in his chair. Mm-hmm. So Allman, the guy who wrote this down, basically said all the official accounts of what happened are wrong. They're false. People lied, basically. Mm-hmm. But what he's saying is true. So Van Noot was claimed to be buried inside a cheap coffin in a secret place. That this was because the council did not want him buried in sacred ground because they're like, dude, he got cursed. Now, of course, there's like an official like place that there's like a place where they say he's buried, but like that he's not really there, something like that. There was a fine quality coffin used for his public funeral. A German traveler known as Otto Menzel has been said to confirm Ullman's version of the events. And basically they think that there was divine justice and then there was this conspiracy to cover it up. I guess supposedly he died from a heart attack.
Okay.
But today workers and visitors experience his bitter presence and they hear him cursing and swearing inside the castle walls.
So I'm going to say, with this one that, sometimes it's not a curse. Sometimes it's a coincidence. There's a fine line, you know, right? It's like people think that because someone was bad, that something bad should happen to them. And that's not necessarily true. That doesn't happen that way. It is not always bad people get, you know, justice done to them. So I'm going to say that part, you know, of the curse is totally just because they believe that there was a curse doesn't mean that there was one. And because oftentimes when people believe something like that, then they can attribute all kinds of things to that particular area. I'm going to say that the people hearing his bittersweet presence, this is actually really interesting. The walls are super, super thick there.
Mm.
So it is possible to have a lot of echoes in that particular castle. So I'm going to say these are echoes of something else, maybe somebody else fighting or something like that. And it doesn't say how often this happens. So I'm going to say it probably doesn't happen as often as this makes you think, you know. So I'm going to give it a zero.
Another zero.
Yep.
All right. I'm going to give this one, I'm going to give it a seven for the curse part.
Okay.
And, you know, the ghost part, I know, you know, a lot of, there's a lot of claims of these noises. And hey, he certainly could be one of them. Because I do think it's interesting that, I mean, yes, there are coincidences, but the fact that, you know, he did kind of this horrific act. Like, people, again, really did not like this man. And then he did this crazy thing. To me, it's not coincidence.
Okay.
All right. We've got one more.
All right.
A little short one here. Kind of going back to some of those guards. Okay. Right. So Hilton Fredericks, who has done guard duty from the 2 a.m. to 4 a.m. shift a lot, says bizarre things do happen in the small hours of the morning. So he said one night a guard heard someone scream for help and voices coming from the dungeon and torture chamber. Mm. When he went to investigate, there was no one there, but he felt a presence. His body became ice cold and the hair stood up on his arms and at the back of his neck, which should sound familiar from my story.
Yeah.
Right.
So I'm going to say that hearing the voices coming from the dungeon, again, it is a the walls are super thick. Like, they have actually made comments about how thick the walls were there. And that can mean that it muffles sounds and makes echoes and makes sound reverberate for a lot longer than it would naturally. So I'm going to say a lot of the screaming and stuff like that could be attributed to that kind of thing. And I know these people are guards, but I mean, if you hear something that sounds like a scream, it doesn't mean it necessarily is a scream. It could just be some other sound that you're hearing. They're not trained in how to decipher, you know, ghost sounds, because there's no ghost in their books. And then I'm going to say that him feeling the presence is fear-based. It's, you know, he's afraid when he goes down there because he's probably heard some stories. And also you're going down into like a prison. I don't like it being called the dungeon area, but going into like the prison area, torture chamber.
Well, they did torture people there.
I know, but I'm going to say that I think that this is all just, you know, it's all fabricated stuff because of his own feelings for the place.
Okay. So I'm assuming zero?
Yes, zero for that one.
Okay. I'm going to give this one a 7 because, I mean, up to me, if you're hearing distinct voices that are screaming and yelling for help and all of that, like to me, like that, especially at like 3 a.m, it's, if it was during the day and maybe there's like tourists there or mm-hmm. something, that's different. But like in the middle of the night, that seems distinctive to me. So that's why I tend to believe it a little bit more.
All right. So what's your overall rating?
So I think my overall rating is going to be 7, right? I had a couple right. sixes at an 8 and yeah, a 7. An 8.
I don't know.
It's, yeah.
I think I'm going to average mine out. So it'll be a 0.
That's average, the average of zeros, zeros is zero. Lots of zeros yeah. into zero. Okay. Yeah.
So that brings us to the closing arguments. This is our last chance to convince you to vote our way. We're each given 1 minute of uninterrupted time. We're going to time each other on our cell phones to keep each other honest. And Rebecca likes to fib sometimes. So Rebecca, are you ready?
Yes.
All right. And go.
All right. So I think that this place is haunted. There's a lot that of horrible things. Obviously, you know, we didn't go into all of the details because it's just a lot of things, but a lot of war, a lot of, you know, slaves, a lot of torturing, a lot of prisoners, lots of bad things that are happening there. And then we have these documented stories from, you know, from soldiers and from those that work there, basically of things that they've seen. You know, some of them maybe there's not as much evidence for, but for others, there's definitely, again, firsthand accounts and things that have happened. So to me, it seems, first of all, there's definitely enough bad, you know, feeling there for there to be spirits. And second, enough evidence.
All right. You had like 5 seconds left.
There you go. All right. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right. And go.
So I'm going to say that oftentimes, you know, the believer is going to come into this and say, wow, well, you know, these reports of hearing these things and doing these things, obviously that means something. Well, to me, it means, yeah, there is some kind of structural thing going on with the place, or maybe there is some kind of outside interference that we're not aware of. So I am leaning towards the, I might not be able to explain every single ghoulish sound that you hear. But I don't take it for paranormal like a believer would. I take it as, you know, there's got to be a scientific reason that I just maybe not know at this moment. So I'm going to say this is not haunted.
All right. You had 16 seconds.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank everyone so much for listening. Please share us with your friends and family, as word of mouth is our best advertisement. If you're one of the new people listening from C2E2, thank you so much for coming along on this voyage. We
so
really
glad
appreciate
to
it.
Have you.
Yeah. And remember to hit that subscribe button. Some people just listen to an episode and never hit that subscribe button. Hit it. Might as well find out about future episodes.
Absolutely. And go back and check out some of our back catalog, because there's a lot of episodes out there. We keep them all out there for
absolutely.
Everybody.
And we always like to thank our VIP patrons. These are our people. They're kind of like our
producers.
Yeah. They, you know, they help us with these ideas and they help us flesh it out a little bit. So Andrew.
Alicia.
Becky.
Kim.
Ernie.
Cindy.
Kevin.
Jessica.
Alice.
Aaron.
Hope.
And Candy.
And on the next episode of Ghostly, we might be having an announcement on the next episode of Ghostly. I'm not 100% sure at this moment.
Yeah, we'll leave it for that.
Yeah, but by that time, things will have happened where I might be able to make an announcement. Mm-hmm. But on the next episode of Ghostly, we will be talking about the Paris catacombs.
I'm so excited.
Obviously in France.
In France. Yeah. Well, but I'm ready. I'm excited for this because of the Olympics coming up, right? We're all going to be watching the Olympics in Paris this summer.
Oui, oui.
And we'll be thinking about the spooky catacombs that will be right underneath all of those athletes.
So can you say something sounds ghostly in French?
No.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I don't.
No, didn't sound very French like. Okay.
La Ghostly de Paris. La Ghostly de Paris. There you go. All
right. Well, the next episode comes out on May 15th. Until then, stay ghostly.
Bye.